This podcast is brought to you by Refix, a natural and organic isotonic drink containing 78 sea minerals. It's available on Amazon UK now, and it's heading to the shelves of all major health food retailers and pharmacies soon. Oh, that is nice.
It is nice. It's really good, though, because when I was talking to the guys at Refix, it kind of marries very well with our brand, because not only is it replacing like your normal kind of sugary isotonic drinks with something that's all natural after training, but also for like things like hangovers.
Important
like,
for our clients.
Yeah, super important for our clients.
Because a lot of them are hungover.
They love drinking and training.
The flavors are good. That one we've just had now, what is it?
That one's orange and they've got lemon. And then they're bringing out Extreme Hydration, which is mixed with coconut water as well as seawater, because they get the minerals that would normally be added in to a...
Floating around in the sea.
Exactly. They just pull it out of the sea.
78 of them.
It's filtered very, very well.
And it's the Spanish sea as well. So...
The cleanest.
Special sea. And also, they do things to help the planet. They do regular beach cleans. They help tidy up our oceans. It's just a great drink and great people. So we're happy to be partnering with them for this podcast.
Our lovely listeners can buy Refix with a little discount, can't they, George?
They can. It is BTL15. And you type that into the discount code on the Refix website and you get 15% off.
That is BTL15.
Refix. Seawater. Sea hydration. Extra slurps.
Sorry,
you drink all the time.
Super slurpy. Hey guys, before we get into this episode of Before Lights podcast, here at Before the Lights, we are super supportive of all our friends who are actors and their strike with the Screen Actors Guild. Therefore, we've held on to some of these episodes until the strikes are finished. So some of the stuff they say might be dated or it might have already come out, but we're super grateful for the time they've given us and it's still super interesting chats. So yeah, have a listen and enjoy.
Hey, I'm Dave Hasty.
I'm George Ashwell.
I'm Josh Betteridge.
And I'm Georgia Canavan. And we are Before the Lights.
We work with actors and teams behind the scenes in film, TV and sport to keep their mental and physical health ticking over on and off screen.
On this podcast, we talk to some of them about how they get the most out of their mind and body and everything in between.
Welcome back to the Before the Lights podcast.
Hello.
On this episode, we are going very off-piste. We're talking to someone who's not an actor. It's Nigel Slater, everyone.
We've been trying to get on the podcast since the very beginning. We've known him for 10 years, been training him for about 10 years.
Long time.
He is one of the most hilarious people we train. And yeah, as you said, very off-piste for us, but it was such a funny conversation.
And it's so great to just see someone or hear someone talking about food in a different way.
He loves food so much.
Yeah.
He relates everything we do back to food, so he will mishear words on purpose, I think.
So if you're kind of into exercise and you love food, settle in for this episode.
I thought you'd never agree to do this.
Why?
Because I feel like we're beneath you. I feel like you do such. You just create things. Yeah, you create things of such quality, though. Like, I thought you'd just be like, not going to waste my time with that shit.
No, it's not a food podcast. And Nigel's like, I'm in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Get the list.
I've been wittering on about food for 35 years. Nobody wants to not hear me talking about food on a podcast.
Yeah, but they do.
I don't know about you guys, but my dad, when he found out that Nigel was a client, it's like the most excited out of any client. And I think I know that your dad's like the same. Like, everyone does want to hear about you talking about food.
Well, bless Nigel every Christmas, bringing his special pen into the gym just so he can sign all of the books for all of our random family members.
A signed book is a sold book.
That's very true. And you do make us buy them first. So,
well, otherwise that statement isn't true. Yeah. Well, yeah, thank you very much for coming on.
No, it is a pleasure. It's lovely to be asked.
And you just touched on it there. You were saying you've been doing what you do for such a long period of time. And I think you are one of the few people that gets better, both in terms of what's being made, but also just looks better with age.
Ah.
You're aging gracefully.
Aging gracefully. Maybe the looking better is something to do with you.
I think you are our longest standing client.
Well, we've known each other for a long time.
12 years I worked out the other day.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wow. Crikey.
That is a long time.
You're also probably best dressed. I'll go with best dress.
You get compliment. There's lots of compliments in the gym for how you dress. You do.
Yeah.
You're a consistent exerciser and a consistently well-styled man.
We're hitting a lot of compliments early.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
That is probably a good point to start. Is Nigel is very consistent with his training, and I feel like compared to the fact we train actors and do like these short stints of like 8 weeks or whatever, and we have people in that are longer, but they'll do
blocks. Whereas Nigel's like, nope, every week, one or two sessions a week.
But if you think about what you do, very often your clients want you to do a certain thing for them, for a part. So they're either going to, they need to bulk up, or they need to lose a bit of weight or whatever. And it's a short, intense thing. You do that for them and then they go off and then they're on set or they're on stage or whatever. With me, it's not about that. Mm. Or occasionally it might be if I'm doing something on TV or something, but it is mostly, it's a steady thing.
Also, you have to cook a lot of cake.
I don't have to cook a lot of cake, but I do cook a lot of cake.
You have to cook, like, you have to take pictures, you have to cook nice food, so therefore you have to train.
Do you eat everything that you make?
Of course he does. He never brings
all
any
of it, though, but all of it.
No. Of course I don't eat all of it. I taste all of it, but then, yeah, I give some of it away.
Never to me, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't do that, do I?
Well, maybe you'll start.
Well, I've got the photographer, the recipe tester, whoever else is around. I've got to have some stuff in the fridge because I live on leftovers. You could measure my life in little Tupperware containers.
Mm. Is it all just from shoots?
Almost all of it, yeah.
If he's not eating food from a shoot, though, he's eating food that I've told him, or like we've agreed that is a good thing to eat, and he hates it. So,
well, you told me to eat and you think I eat.
Yeah, yeah. And then you come in. Yeah, that's what happens.
That's my favourite bit when Nigel comes in and says, training with George is regular today. And I go, well, don't tell him, but I've had this yesterday. But we won't tell George that bit.
We sit down, we catch up with each other, and then Nigel starts reeling off what he's eaten since I've last seen him, basically. The first time he starts talking, the first things he mentions is the abridged healthy version of everything that he's eaten. And then I'll just catch him somewhere in a session where he's like, oh yeah, and when so-and-so came around, we had this lovely lemon cake. I was like, you didn't mention the lemon cake earlier. And you're like, well, yeah, I had lemon cake. And then I had to have custard with it. And then I had to have, and it just builds and builds and builds over a period of time.
Yeah, but if I start with the healthy bit. So when you say, what did I have for lunch? And I say, or breakfast maybe, and I say, oh, apple. You don't have to know it was apple crumble.
Yeah, with custard for breakfast.
What a breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Best. Start the day with a crumble.
Yeah, trifle, crumble, they're the best
breakfast trifle.
In the world. Breakfast trifle.
I had a trifle at the weekend and it knocked my socks off. I could eat that for breakfast.
Yeah, I do. Oh. So when I say just a crisp, he knows there's no such thing as one crisp.
No. Oh, yeah. But you've got a good technique that you might want to share with the world, to the people listening, about how you ration yourself crisps and biscuits.
Yeah, okay. I never, never take the packet upstairs, ever. Crisps in a bowl.
Yeah.
Mm.
Biscuit on a plate, which sounds so precious.
It's not actually taking biscuits to bed.
No.
I have never taken a biscuit to bed.
Was it your dad that used to eat chocolate bars in bed?
Oh, that is a good story.
I was about to break
that
it.
That is a good story.
My dad would go to bed and my mum would wake up in the morning and to walk round to his side of the bed to go to the bathroom, and like sort of feet would get crumpled on something. There's penguin wrappers and Tunnocks wafers.
Tunnocks wafers.
They're all just always in it. He used to hide them, try and shuffle them under the bed. So he clearly goes to bed before mum, goes, I'm going to get an early night. He sneaks into the kitchen and gets a couple of penguins on top of the fridge, goes upstairs and just, I can imagine his little face in bed like, then hides them under the bed. Hide them under the bed is hilarious, though, because I'm sure your mum probably cleans them up and then they're just gone and he's like, oh, this
he is thinks he's getting away with it.
Yeah. With hilarious.
I can think of worse things to share your bed with than a Tunnocks. Tunnocks are pretty good, aren't they?
That'd be good, wouldn't
it? Yeah.
Nigel came in the other day and was like, I really need something sweet. And because of you, I've got nothing sweet in the house. So I ate an old trifle sponge.
Just a sponge.
There was nothing. I've got quite a sort of big walk-in larder and there was nothing in there. Absolutely nothing.
Did you like look at it, go away, think about it, and then go back to it? And then
I just
thought,
I can't eat that. But I was so desperate for sugar.
We've all been there.
And, I mean, they taste stale even before they're stale. Yeah, I was. I was desperate.
So 12 years of training.
12 years. Yes.
Could you summarise it in one or two words?
God, I said, no, I don't do one or two words. It's the fact that when I leave the gym, I feel great. I really feel good. And with me, my physical health is so entwined with my mental health. One of my many injuries. I hurt my elbow a few weeks ago and I couldn't come and see you. It really affected me. I got really quite low. And it was only because I wasn't doing any exercise, because I couldn't.
It's not really the exercise.
Well, it's about the exercise. It's also, of course, it's about the chatting. You know, choosing a trainer it's like a lot of your clients, I suppose, your film clients stuff, they have to have the right agent. Mm. The chemistry has got to be right. They can push you in a direction you don't want to go. They can make you do things that you think, why am I doing this? It has to be the right trainer. So I didn't want one who was going to shout at me. Nobody's going to, you know, be sergeant major to me and make me burst into tears. I didn't want that sort of trainer. I didn't want those ones that think their clients should live on protein powder and steamed broccoli. Mm-hmm. Well, fuck off. So there's no way. I wanted somebody who understood where I was coming from my training, because I know it's the elephant in the room, but it is food and it's my life. It's the way I make my money. It's the way I comfort myself. It's the way I feed people. It's a huge, huge part of my life. Yeah. So I needed a trainer who liked food, because some of them don't.
Well, George made some fantastic meals at university. And the most famous one. Have we gone through this already?
No, I don't think we've mentioned this on the podcast.
Meat on meat on meat.
Meat on meat on meat.
Has he told you about that?
Tell me.
He was so proud of it as well.
Oh, I loved it.
It was
so
great.
Basically, it was a quesadilla, but it was just every kind of deli meat you could find. Mm-hmm. So you put a tortilla in the frying pan, then all like chorizo, parma ham, everything, and then a load of cheese, and then another tortilla. And then you fried it on both sides. It was a quesadilla, but it was like an inch thick.
Yes.
And it was all
And you got to say meal, meal, meat.
No, I didn't even coin the term meal, meal,
meat. I don't know
who
coined
that. You lot that
but I'm sure that. One day you did like a, you double stacked it.
I did. I put an extra tortilla in the middle.
I remember that.
My word.
Get that in your book.
I have definitely improved my culinary skills since university.
We were 18, 19 at this stage.
Go back to like, you aren't our typical client and you aren't our, I guess what people would consider like the normal gym goer.
You don't look like the normal gym guy.
But you know what? Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh, get out this one, Dave.
What? Yeah. Now it's been made awkward. No, what I was going to go towards was the names that you give to exercises, and also the fact that when you're in the gym, you never know what you've done in the gym. Yeah. Is one of my favorite things about you coming to the gym.
I was hoping you'd go there because that is absolutely what really works me up. That. You keep changing the names of things. you keep saying, Nigel, do such and such. And I haven't a clue what you're talking about.
He looked into my soul when he said that then.
The only way I can remember things is by giving them a stupid name.
Yeah, you do.
I do. Because then I know that, I know what you mean.
Well, you keep a diary of most things you do, especially your food, right?
I keep a diary of it. Yeah.
And one time you came into the gym and you were like, George, I want to do this exercise. I've got in my diary that I really enjoyed an exercise the other day. And I was like, what was that? He's like, well, weirdly, I don't know what it was called, but I gave it a name. Bum bum knee pulls.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It makes total sense.
But okay, so for the listener, I had to then go through the whole session that I'd done very quickly. No, it was hanging knee, what do you call it?
George has been rumbled. He can't remember the name.
Bum bum knee pulls has really thrown me. Hanging knee tucks. So hanging knee tucks. So he'd put his arms in the harnesses and bring his knees up to his chest. You're always like, we've never done this before. I'm like, we've done this for the last 10 years.
But the new name had given it a new light.
Yeah, that's the joy of having a trainer. You haven't got to remember stuff.
That's true.
That's really important. But also, I need a trainer. You know, there's a hotel that I belong to, their health club. And I know I don't push myself as hard as when I'm with you. Things slip, my feet aren't in the right position, my posture's awful. I can see it in the mirror. Mm. All my injuries, every single one have, except when I fell over, they've all been when I've been training without a trainer.
People working in that in kitchens and coming from that environment, it's so like constant, and the hours are mental and all that kind of stuff. Was there a point or part of you that was like, I just need to make sure I'm looking after myself? Because I guess a lot of people in that world probably don't.
Yeah, it's a very good point. Because when you get to a certain age, doing what I do, something just happens to your body. And probably because we're all, you know, we'll probably drink far too much. But you can end up looking like I didn't want to look. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've never, please God, never want to be a sort of, you know, geriatric gym bunny with a six pack and a permatan. That's not where I want to go. Mm-hmm. But neither did I want to have that look that is simply, it's unhealthy. Mm. And I was aware that although my weight was okay, I had one of those, You know those, I call them MOTs, where you go to a diagnostic clinic and they test everything. They do all your blood tests and everything, the whole lot. They, you know, stick things up your bum and everything. And those tests show that I was carrying a little bit too much weight.
Mostly apple crumble breakfast.
Absolutely. Breakfast. But also my posture. And we've sort of sorted it out, haven't we?
Absolutely. I mean, as you said, it's like your goal was never to be a muscle-bound freak. You've gone from, as you said, like slightly big around the middle, bad posture, to less big around the middle, good posture, looking slim, fitting your clothes really well. And that was your goal when we first met. It was, you hated your posture on screen. We haven't done as much TV stuff in the last few years, but you were like, oh, my shoulders are so round. And I remember once I actually taped your shoulders back. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah. I do remember having them taped back. I like that feeling.
Yeah, we did it solidly for like a couple of months.
Well, we had to, because I had noticed my posture on screen, that it wasn't right. That I do need to just keep a gentle, steady eye on it.
Yeah.
And I do, and you do.
It's a very healthy way of doing it, though, and just having and noticing those, like, the little reminders, because I think it's easy to go around with blinkers on, isn't it, and just think about the present moment. But knowing, like, if I do this now, it's going to make a difference.
Just longevity.
In the next 6 months, in the next year. Just longevity.
Normally, you just catch yourself in a mirror somewhere and realise that your posture's not good. The problem with television is that it's there forever. And they keep on showing repeats, and every time you...
It's tricky with what you do, though, because, first of all, you're a writer, so, like, the nature of being a writer leads you into that forward, hunched over.
Yeah, I tend to stop when my chin hits the keyboard.
and then even like backing that up with being a cook, again, it's the same. Like, you have to be in that space, when you'd look at it, you'd be like, it's not the prettiest position to be in, but it's essential for what you do. So I guess like having the awareness of it and being able to counteract it through exercise is a real big thing.
But he's got a great overhead press.
Yes,
get his arms up quite well.
Good range of motion. Oh, now.
Yeah.
You can.
I'm quite good with that one.
We touched on it a little bit earlier, but you are an avid sort of diary writer. Did that stem from like wanting to just keep track of what you're doing, or did you find it as kind of a cathartic process and something that helped give you like mental clarity and that kind of stuff?
I kept a diary as a kid, probably until I was in my late teens. Thank God those have all gone somewhere, burned. But I started again, I suppose, about 15 years ago when an editor said, would I keep a list of everything I'd eaten in the course of a year and be totally honest and write every single thing down? And they were going to publish it. And I did. I wrote everything down absolutely religiously at the end of every day. You know, every Smartie, every Crisps, every Kit Kat, wrote the whole thing down. We published it and I never stopped. It was just a habit I got into. There is no reason I have to sit down at night and write down what I've eaten during the day, but I just do.
Yeah.
But it's quite good. I do not want to write in my... Because I write in fountain pen, and I'm a bit of an old fusspot about paper and all this bit. And I write very carefully. I do not want to write down two Kit Kats. I want to write down something delicious and healthy and whatever. You know, I might not mention the jelly beans today, partly because they're horrible, yeah. But I might not. But I actually know that I eat better because I'm having to admit to it in black and white.
Yeah.
I'm actually having to write it down that, yep, I didn't have three chocolate digestives, I had six. And I don't want to write that. I don't want to see that when I'm gone.
It's a technique we use with clients sometimes. When we're starting with one of the actors and they have no understanding of nutrition yet, and I'm like, we can't just go, all right, we're going to write out everything for you to eat, because they're not likely to follow that. There might be a load of food in there they don't like. So we go, all right, here's a little cheat sheet of roughly what you should be eating, as in like portion sizes. Go away, take a picture of it every day for the 3 days, and then show it to me. And I'll go, okay, this is what you've understood. Take that out, add that. But in doing that, in taking a picture of it, they've made sure it's healthy.
Yeah.
So you've made them accountable for themselves before they even got there, because they know they're going to have to send it to their trainer. So they're like, well, I would have had a sandwich because I can't be bothered, but in fact I'm going to make a meal because I've got to send a picture to my trainer.
Totally.
So that's the same thing, but you've been doing it for yourself for 15 years.
And probably always will.
Yeah. Mm. I guess those habits, those kind of healthy habits, whatever they are, if it's someone that gets up and goes
for a walk.
Yeah,
what are healthy
habits? Not having five digestives or two Kit Kats.
I find it astonishing. This might sound so dumb to say it, but like what you're thinking in this head of yours and just simply putting it on a bit of paper, taking it from your brain onto some physical thing, like how it can make you feel, but just on a grand level of like, it might make you feel really better about yourself by getting something off your chest and writing it down. And it just changes your habits. It's like, crazy.
There's a real movement now for journaling, for like manifesting your goals. And it all involves writing it onto a piece of paper. So you're letting it out of just whirling around in your brain. So that's basically what you're doing by writing a diary.
It's got an image of me pulling out a big paper that says McDonald's 10 times. Oh, manifesting some dinner.
I haven't had to write Big Mac down for a while, actually.
I remember the days of the Mac attack.
I still have Mac attacks, but I just don't carry them out. I just have the attack.
And then go eat a ladyfinger in a cupboard.
Eat a ladyfinger in a cupboard.
Exactly. You have the attack, but you don't.
Yeah, he doesn't
develop. Exactly. I just
can't. Is that down to not wanting to write it down in the diary? Partly.
Partly, no. It's because I only have Mac attacks very occasionally. Uh-huh. It's the Pornhub of the food world. McDonald's, it really is.
It really is. You know
you shouldn't. And you don't do it very often, but sometimes.
and it's normally like in an airport or it's in like service station.
Normally.
Well, I've had them all over the world, I have to say. Because you've got to work out whose is best. You know, Helsinki is very good. Tokyo is very good.
We still talk about McDonald's.
Yes, we're still talking about McDonald's.
Just wanted to clear that up.
Tokyo is very good, you said.
Yeah.
Also, makers of strange Kit Kats. You once brought me home.
Oh, my word,
You once came back from Japan and gave his trainer a Kit Kat. This is classic Nigel. A wasabi Kit Kat. And it was bright green.
Did you try it?
Yeah, it was really good.
Was it?
Yeah.
They have the strangest Kit Kats on earth. Yeah. Flavours that would never work here.
Is that why you go back to Japan frequently?
For the Kit Kats.
Get another Kit Kat.
Salt and lemon Kit Kats.
Ooh,
yeah.
Wow. See, that I'd be intrigued by. The wasabi, maybe not.
Funny enough, it's the only what I call street chocolate that I still like.
Street chocolate.
Well, as a kid, I really did like candy bars. I like chocolate bars. Uh-huh. And, you know, you can measure my life in Toffee Crisps and all those sort of things. But as I've got older, I just never eat them. But I am quite occasionally partial to a Kit Kat.
They are good because you can take your time over a Kit Kat, I find.
Yeah, you can.
You can nibble off the ends of it.
Anymore.
Oh, do they not have that anymore?
No, they don't have the foil.
But even just
I used to rub it so you could read the Kit Kat.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then you run your finger down.
It's a time-consuming biscuit, which is what you want. You don't want it to be gone in half a second, do you? Because then you just want another one.
Where do we stand on Kit Kat Chunkies?
No. Not the same.
Yeah,
too much chocolate.
There's too much going on, isn't
there? They're just wrong.
They're nice.
Also, have you... plain Kit Kats, they don't work either.
Plain ones?
Yeah.
Well, just a bog standard Kit Kat. So you've tasted the fruits of the Japanese Kit Kat.
I have.
And you cannot go back.
Well, I have a very sweet friend who sends me these little care packages from Tokyo every few months.
Of Kit Kats?
Yes, and I open them up and they're full of mini Kit Kats. They are literally 2 inches long and they are so wonderful.
Do you bother to break them or just down in one?
No, break them. It's a ritual eating a Kit Kat. It's not just about shoving your gob. It's a ritual.
Writing down what you've eaten and that making kind of impact in the little decisions day to day.
Yes.
Does that part of your life cross over into the recipes you choose at all? Would you ever think, can I make it healthier or can I change this or anything like that?
Yes. Every recipe has a story, has a history. Mm-hmm. And I do make recipes healthier. Also, I do look at a recipe now and say, does it really need the meat?
Yeah.
Does it really need the dairy? Uh-huh. Because so many readers, particularly, must remember that although I write for The Observer, it's part of The Guardian, we have a big vegan and vegetarian readership. Mm-hmm. I want to please them. I write for them, not for myself. I don't think of healthy because I never really think of foods in healthy or unhealthy. Something's either good or it's not.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Mm. And the effect that it has on my body is going to be good whatever happens. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to make me feel great.
Yeah.
Mm. I will just eat less of it.
Do you articulate that when you're writing the recipe down? Because I guess your recipes are almost like a story to read as well, aren't they? Do you have that element of it that you're not saying this is like an everything kind of food?
I find myself writing that more and more. Uh-huh. Partly because people do love having a go nowadays. I mean,
really?
Oh, keyboard warriors. They absolutely love having a go about recipes. So you kind of prepare yourself for it and you say, look, this is a treat. I know it's got sugar and it's got butter and it's got cream, but you're not eating it every day. Mm-hmm. Mm. It's just going to touch that button. It's going to press that button for the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, have a look at it. It says serves 8.
Uh-huh. That's the best response.
Otherwise, it's a week's worth of breakfast afterwards.
It's a week's worth.
What a week that would be.
What a week. Maybe we should all commit next week that we all choose a dessert and every morning we have to...
I'm not eating dessert every morning. I've always said I've not got a sweet tooth, I've got a meat tooth. Like, I don't care about cakes.
I don't know why that made me
laugh.
Just the idea of a meat tooth.
I ain't got no sweet tooth, I got a meat tooth.
I haven't got a meat. Yeah. I mean, I don't even eat that much meat anymore, but savoury is definitely.
People now don't eat so many different things. I mean, I don't give dinner parties, but if I did, it would be a nightmare of, oh, by the way, did I tell you I don't eat this or I don't eat that? Yeah. It really, you have to keep a diary.
You've cooked for me twice in our 12 years. I remember both of them.
Really?
Yeah.
What twice. Did I cook? I've cooked for you.
Yeah, you cooked for me twice, which I know you're surprised because you don't cook for anyone. You don't do dinner parties. You cooked for me a shepherd's pie that was possibly the most delicious thing I've ever
did
eaten.
Did I?
Yeah. And a lentil soup.
Ah.
That was also absolutely delicious. And you made my dad some marmalade, so that was pretty good. He loved that.
Oh, God, I've forgotten all that. Right, you see? But also there is something quite lovely about giving somebody something you know that they want to eat and they feel okay eating it. And they feel special because that's yours. It hasn't got, you know, whatever in it. Mm. But more and more, I do eat bad things. I do eat good things. I just don't eat that much of them. Mm. Eat lots and lots of different things, but just not much of it.
I like the your thing about cooking for certain people. When I met my girlfriend who is vegan, I absolutely loved trying to make the food I love to cook available to her for her to eat. Or like
tricky when it's meat on meat
doesn't work. But there's loads of fake meats out there now. Yeah, I could easily do a soy chorizo. Fake cheese, meat on feet, easily. It could be done.
But if you think of the diets that have for centuries been vegan anyway or vegetarian, I mean, a lot of Indian cooking, a lot of Chinese cooking, it's never been near meat. They're not, you know, and all that stuff is part of what we cook. It's just part. So I don't label things very often. I don't say this is vegan or this is vegetarian because I've always liked to treat readers that they can actually look at a list of ingredients, and if there isn't a pork chop in there, then, you know, it's
probably vegetarian.
Vegetarian. So I don't label things. To me, it's either delicious or it isn't.
I guess and your books are more like they have been about the seasons and like the seasonal eating, which I guess would lead people to make different choices at different times of the year anyway, in terms of the ingredients they're using.
Very much so. If you keep an eye on what is in season, I think you do tend to eat more healthily.
Yeah, yeah.
You just naturally do.
Even just from a textural point of view and like how you feel after you eat something, if it's a bit mushy and bland.
Why are blackberries so resilient and everywhere?
Have you got an answer, Nigel?
You mean growing everywhere?
Yeah, growing everywhere.
My childhood in the autumn was just walking back home from school, just eating tons and tons of blackberries. No, not that high. No, you have to pick the high ones. Don't pick the low blackberries. Don't
dog
eat those.
But they grow the most, or the dog piss on them.
Or me, or the, you know, schoolboys.
Talking of we, I think that brings us on to the pissy blackberries.
Oh, right.
Blackberries, yeah.
Not just we in general. But that brings us nicely to the funny stories section
of
the podcast.
I haven't got any.
Not true.
Honestly, I haven't because...
Embarrassing stories.
Every trip to the gym is an embarrassing story. Every time. And I haven't, honestly, I
Have
genuinely
haven't. Have you got any embarrassing
because,
stories?
Do you know, I don't... And it's not because I don't get embarrassed, because I do.
No.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever...
What about when you've been at work, when you were cooking, anything that's happened?
No.
You're just seamlessly good all the time.
He prepares well. He's a man of, you know, of honour when he comes in, quietly changes, enters the gym, gets his work and goes. That's it.
I mean, he's...
there's training in between.
I mean, yeah. Nigel is of the James Norton family of will get into his pants in the middle of the meeting room.
Yes.
If he knows no one's around, James doesn't often check, but Nigel knows no one's around.
Which I think we all do.
Have you ever used the changing room? Or is it always in the... In the entrance.
I haven't used the changing room. I forget that they're there.
I mean, if you don't need that. To use it, there's more space. Well, where the
and also,
Nigel
comes in a time which is often very quiet in the afternoon, so there's often not people around. So but you have the whole gym to yourself.
Yeah, but there's always somebody really interesting around. It is. Your clients, you know, very often they're people that I've kind of always wanted to meet. But the lovely thing about that gym is that you feel okay saying hello to somebody. You know, you're not like, you don't feel like a stalker because you've seen somebody on television. You think, oh, wow.
And you say that, Nigel, but every single one of them has said the same thing about you. Some of my favourite conversations in the gym have been you catching up with someone either you've seen on TV and them responding. I remember you and Daniel Kaluuya when you first met. These were like two peas in the weirdest pea pod I've ever seen in my life. Both big Arsenal fans talking about football, and I was like, this is such a great conversation to be part of. I loved it. But yeah, it's just so nice to have people in the gym that you have mutual hatred of us, basically, and you can talk about it.
Yeah, you both know what's coming and what's happened.
It is just such a great atmosphere. I mean, it really is. And that lovely thing that, because trainers aren't just trainers anymore, you talk to your hairdresser, or nowadays some people talk to their shrinks, whatever. Trainers become confidants. And I find myself talking to you probably in a way that some people, they might be quite surprised, because it just feels comfortable and it feels right.
And until this moment, I've never shared anything that you've told me, but now I'm outing you for eating biscuits and live on a podcast.
You're the only person who is kind of allowed to. Like, you can get into my phone, so you can go into my bag to get my phone.
Yeah.
And when I say, oh, George, it's on my phone, and I see your hand go in there, and I think, he's going to find that when I said I had chicken salad for lunch, he's going to find it's actually a chicken salad sandwich and the packet is still in there. I kind of know that's going to happen. And it was a double decker, you know.
That's a good lunch.
Club sandwich.
That's exactly a good lunch. Exactly. But no, it is the atmosphere of the place.
We love having you. And we've loved having you on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
It's been lovely. It's been
such a different angle that we've talked about food and health and the relationship between those two things. I think definitely transfers into how we approach our clients when they're needing to kind of change their diet, is it not taking things away from them because of that connection. I think that having you as part of like the wider family of BTL, it's like definitely helps to kind of figure that out as a way of us explaining it to people.
Yeah.
For sure. Is there anything sort of coming up on the horizon for you outside of the gym?
You know, it's funny because I have spent quite a lot of time doing television and being in front of the camera, which I never meant to. It just kind of happened. I think anything I do now will probably be the other side of it. I mean, certainly I'm working on something at the moment, which I can't talk about. Mm-hmm. It's not really my project or my position to say, but certainly behind, not actually behind the camera, but still making programs, but not actually having to stand there and stir a pot in front of a, you know.
Get your shoulders taped back to
the Get my shoulders taped. Yeah, exactly.
I can look at your own posture.
Yeah. Now I can
see. So you're producing,
Absolutely producing, yes. Which is great. I mean, it's still program making.
And you're always, you'll be in the Observer magazine every Sunday.
30 years next year.
Wow. You'll always be writing.
There's always a book.
Although something you said just then has brought a funny story that involves you but isn't you to my memory. And that's when we, the three of us, went to watch Toast when it was on in London.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
And there's the part where you go and you sit down and there's a walnut whip just sitting on your little seat, like a truffle pig or something. Within seconds, it was just vanished. Josh's was gone. We only sat down. Exactly. And then over the speaker comes on something along the lines of, you might have noticed there's a walnut whip on your seat. Please don't eat it.
I haven't got one.
Please save it for this point. And he'd already eaten it. Oh, hadn't even had the opportunity for that message, which came pretty soon after people took their seats.
We worked so hard to orchestrate that moment. the whole auditorium eats its walnut whip and you'd eaten yours.
Well, what's great is I actually got to experience the whole audience eating. So I got to observe that moment.
But I remember in the play, they ask how you eat your walnut whip.
Yeah.
Josh eats it like a truffle pig about 2 hours before he should have. That's how he eats it.
Look, I told you
this time. Just to walk into a room, go, ooh, and then eat it straight away.
Look, you've heard what happens in my parents' bedroom. And there's nothing in it.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
And it's just my dad eating penguin bars and
and Tunnock bars.
Like father, like
when
son.
When we see chocolate, we'll go for it.
Such a clever part of it, though, because there is that thing when you taste something, it just brings you back to that memory of being a kid. Mm. And like you watch the play, obviously, you're kind of engaged and.
Well, I told my nan, and it was like she was like nearly in tears. But eating a, what, I can't remember, like a lemon meringue pie. You gave a lemon meringue
That's
pie.
That's right. But it was also the smell of things. Mm. When you're unwrapping sweets that you haven't probably eaten since you were 11.
Loved it. And I've loved
this podcast.
Loved the episode. It's been a real pleasure. An honour, I'll say, to have you on.
I've loved it too.
Well, thank you, Nigel.
That's great.
Thank you, Nigel.
Woo. Thank you.